Hello, everyone. This is Mary Sutherland, BUFO Radio, and tonight we have with us Frank Joseph. And Frank is becoming like a regular on the BUFO Radio, as well as the Sci-Fi Cafe and Earth Mysteries Museum. He was down at our place last year for the Burlington Vortex Conference. He was here in for our summer solstice festivals, and now he's going to be back again for our Burlington Vortex Conference, October 30th, 31st, and November 1st, along with his beautiful wife, Laura. So, how is everything going with you?
Well, quite good. It's rough. My father passed away a few weeks ago.
Oh, no, I'm sorry to hear that.
He was 95, and of course, it's something everybody experiences. But whenever it happens, it's very difficult.
It is.
I found that all of my spiritual work for the last 30 or so years is wonderful preparation for this. And it's interesting that if you do have some kind of a spiritual outlook, I don't think any is really necessarily better than another, but some spiritual foundation, when things like this happen, you grieve naturally, but you can get through it. And I've noticed that others in my family who do not have any spiritual grounding, some of them do, but some don't, those that didn't have any, they took it really very badly. They had a very, very hard time with it. And so that's kind of a lesson there, I suppose.
Well, I've gotten to the point where I don't see death because of the, you know, my research. I just don't see death as death anymore. It's just a crossing over into another dimension.
Exactly.
And I look at dimension as a modern-day term for the biblical term heaven. So.
That's absolutely correct. And it's good that we do have these points of view because otherwise it's really, really rough. I mean, it's difficult anyway. Even with these elevated points of view, it's very hard to lose a loved one. It's natural. You don't think, oh, well, they're just in the next room or something. But nonetheless, it does teach us that death is just a door that we all go through. That's all. And we go through that door into another place.
Yeah. Hopefully a better place. And I'm sure it is, because you're always going, it's like the Jacob's ladder effect. You're always going up.
Well, there are some people, I believe, though, that do not.
Yeah, well,
and they choose.
I didn't want. Yeah,
this is their choice.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree with you. I believe that the majority, hopefully, the vast majority of us, do go up. I like that the Jacob's ladder effect. That's something that seems very correct. But there are some people who have absolutely no spiritual views and are very hostile people, and they're not going to change by just being killed or just by dying. And so that's where you get some difficulties going. But that's
well,
not
I think a lot has to do with the our religious teachings too.
Yep.
Through the thousands of years, the teachings that we have been given haven't helped us to evolve into a higher dimensional
correct.
Self.
Absolutely correct.
You know, so. But I think that more and more of us are getting back to the old ways.
That's why your work is so important, Mary.
And now you just finished a book on synchronicity.
Well,
am I correct, or you're working on it now, or
no? Actually, I wrote the book about 12 years ago. It was first published in 1999, and it was released then as Synchronicity in You, and it was probably my most successful book. Shirley MacLaine was nice enough to write a little recommendation for it, which we published, and it was published by Element Books in Boston, and from there it went on to editions in Britain, Italy, Japan, Holland, Slovenia. So it did well, and now it's been republished with a new British edition. It just came out.
Uh-huh. Okay, because last time I talked to you, I think you said something about the book was coming out on synchronicity. And
uh-huh.
But that was a reprint, basically.
Yeah. The other one went out of print, and this other company in England called Arcturus Books, they picked it up, and they've reissued it with a beautiful cover. I find that all the information in it is still pretty sound.
Uh-huh. Think it actually should be even more popular today than it was in 1999. I think that people were just starting to open up and explore a tad the possibilities of how synchronicity works. But now, and you know, we've come a long ways in the last years, and so I would think that more and more people are going. There would be a lot more people wanting to purchase that book.
Well, we'll see. I don't know. I just hope it does some good. The idea of synchronicity for our listeners that are not familiar with that term, synchronicity is a term that was coined by Carl Jung, who was one of the greatest thinkers of the 20th century and certainly the real founding father of modern psychology. And synchronicity means meaningful coincidence. So that if, for example, you're thinking of someone that you haven't thought of, say, in 20 years. And you just happen to think of that person, and a few moments later the phone rings and it's that very person that you haven't thought of in 20 years. That's an example of synchronicity or meaningful coincidence. And it seems rather insignificant in itself, but I was always intrigued by these little incidents that everybody goes through, and I was really shocked to find that synchronicity is the modern-day mystical experience. It's an enormously powerful and very significant phenomena that happens to everybody. Unfortunately, the vast majority of people, they just brush these things off as, oh, just quirks of life. But they're not. They're part of a magnificent mystical pattern that everyone is involved in. Everybody has their own mystical pattern, as it were. And synchronicities are literally messages from the gods. That's the way I regard it. And what makes my book a little bit different is that I don't really get into theories so much. I'm not interested in that. But my book is called The Power of Coincidence. And that's its new title. And the idea of that book is to tell people, to show people how they can apply these little synchronicities or meaningful coincidences in their lives to tremendous guidance, unbelievable guidance. And it's a very simple seven-step process that the readers can go through. And it mostly engenders just keeping your own synchronicity journal. And if you can do that, you'll be amazed. I guarantee, I should have a guarantee in the book, you'll be amazed at the messages that life seems to be sending you, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I watch for synchronicity all the time. I watch for the signs. It could be like a feather dropping, looking down and finding a lucky penny, a person showing up in my life that I hadn't thought about for a while. There's just so many different signs out there. And people, like you said, they don't pay attention to those signs. But boy, once you start paying attention to those signs, I'll tell you, it opens up a whole new world for a person.
Well, I can tell you through my own experience that I went through a process. I was raised in the Roman Catholic Church. And as I got older, I distanced myself from the church. I became a complete atheist. I was worse than an atheist. I was a nihilist. I didn't believe in anything. And I found myself going through a few synchronicities that I thought were kind of interesting. But I had one meaningful coincidence that really changed my life. I was just driving home from work. I lived in the Chicago area at that time. This is in the early 1990s, about 1990, 1991. I was driving home from work. I lived in the Chicago suburbs. I worked downtown Chicago. And the nature of my work was that I would arrive home at different times of the day. Sometimes I'd get home as early as 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and other times I wouldn't get home until almost midnight. And it was happening to just a spring day, not thinking of anything particular, going driving home, when all of a sudden I began thinking of Salman Rushdie. Salman Rushdie is the author of something called Satanic Verses, which is all against the Islamic religion. I had no interest in Salman Rushdie. I had no interest in Islam. I still don't, particularly. But that name kept running through my head like a mantra. I just couldn't get, like, sometimes you'll think of a dumb little tune, some melody, and you can't get it out of your head. It keeps repeating itself. And so this was happening with this. Just came out of nowhere, thinking of Salman Rushdie. Rushdie, Rushdie, Rushdie. I think, what's this all about? So I actually made a concerted effort to push it out of my mind. And just as I did that, I crossed over from one expressway into another, and this car pulled ahead of me. I remember it very clearly. It was a dark blue Buick. And I had just at that moment said, I'm not going to think about Rushdie anymore. And this car pulls ahead of me, and the license plate read, Rushdie.
Oh,
so I laughed out loud. I thought, boy, is that funny? And then I got this, like, this woo-woo feeling, like, wait a minute. What are the chances of this happening? I'm thinking of Rushdie. Never thought of him before. I don't care. And here's this car appears in front of me with the license plate Rushdie. And then I thought, well, maybe it has something to do with mental telepathy. Of course, I didn't believe in mental telepathy. I didn't believe in anything.
Right.
And I thought, boy, what does that mean? Am I supposed to go out and read all up on Salman Rushdie? I never have. Or Islam, and no attraction there. But then I thought later on, huh, what do you know? Rushdie. I was speeding. The car ahead of me was speeding. Everybody in Chicago speeds.
All right.
And you break the word down. It has nothing to do with Salman Rushdie. Rushdie. That's how it's spelled. R-U-S-H-D-I-E. Maybe if I had not paid attention to that, who knows? Got into an accident, been killed. One thing I have found about synchronicity, and it has many benefits, important benefits. One thing, and you'll recognize this, it makes you very much aware of the subtleties going on in your life. And there are a lot more subtleties going on in one's life than we have ever imagined. And paying attention to synchronicities makes us more observant, and that's important. But that started me on. After I had that incident back in 1991, I guess it was, I resolved to figure out, what is this phenomena? And I found out that it is called synchronicity. It's a real phenomenon. And I undertook a kind of an informal, unscientific study of about 200 people of all ages and backgrounds. And I asked them personally, I interviewed about 200 people over the course of the next several years, what they thought about meaningful coincidence. And everybody was very happy to explain their own experiences to me. And I wrote them all down and copied down all this anecdotal material, and I copied down what they thought of them. Some people were atheists, as I was. Others were very devout Christians. Others were pagans or Wiccans. Didn't make any difference. It happened to everybody. And it was from compiling notes for 6 years on this, just to find out myself, what is this phenomena, that my friend said, you know, you've got all that material in there, why don't you turn it into a book? I said, no, I can't write about it because I don't have any kind of background in psychology at all. I'm just an ordinary guy. And they said, well, if you write a book about it, maybe you can figure it out. Maybe it'll systematize itself in your mind. So I figured, okay, I'll write the book just for myself. So I organized the material that I'd been collecting for 6 years. And part of the material that I collected was I kept a little diary for about 6 years, of my own synchronicities. And I would, sometimes something would happen, I'd write them down in my journal, I'd date them, and I'd forget about them. I just did it, though, very religiously, if you excuse the term, for about 6 years. And I had not read my journal for all that time. And as I'm putting my material together for the first time, I read that journal. And I read all the synchronicities that I had collected over the past and had forgotten about. And after reading about 5 or 6 pages, I had to stop reading and put it aside. It was one of the most powerful experiences of my life. The reason why was, each one of those individual synchronicities didn't seem to mean much. Sometimes there were silly things like the license plate with Rushdie. But I found out that if you look at synchronicities in the aggregate, not individually, a very miraculous thing seems to happen. Doesn't seem to happen, it does happen. Patterns will emerge, and cycles will emerge. And a little dumb little synchronicity that means nothing in December will click into something 6 or 8 months later. They are all deeply interrelated, and you cannot escape the impression, and others have noted this before me, that you are following stage directions, that somebody is ordering your life. And up until that moment, I thought my life was absolute chaos, had no meaning, certainly no direction. And I'm looking at these synchronicities, and I could see that my life had tremendous direction, had deep meaning, and I didn't realize it. And since then, I've still been keeping my diaries, and I've talked to now several hundred people about all this, this same phenomenon. I'm still interested in it, even though the book is written. And I'm absolutely convinced that these little meaningful coincidences are messages from the gods, or God, if you ever want to put it. They're messages from, I hate to use the term God, because whenever you use that term, it summons up all kinds of different images in people's minds.
I always say the universe.
Well, I use the word the compassionate intelligence that runs the cosmos. And this compassionate intelligence, which can form the galaxies and swirl them together, is also interested in every nuance in your own life, every nuance in your life. So talk about a personal God, absolutely, incredibly intimate. And when this got through my cement head, that these messages were coming from someplace outside myself, from an intelligence, obviously, that was intimately interested in the slightest thing that I was doing, that established in my mind beyond a shadow of a doubt that there is a compassionate intelligence that interpenetrates everything. And it has led me to a definition of God. God is the totality of everything that exists. And if that's the case, then you are certainly a part of God as a blade of grass. And this intelligence that has ordered the universe and built our Earth sends us little messages from time to time. And they amount to guidance. They all amount to a form of guidance, which we can choose to ignore or follow. Even when we don't recognize it, sometimes we follow it subconsciously. So the basic theme of this book, which is The Power of Coincidence, it's for every person. It's not for... certainly not for professionals or clinical psychologists, because I have no background in that whatsoever. I just wrote it as an average person for average people. But if you follow synchronicities and if you pay attention to them in the simple way that I've found, that I've applied, your life will assume tremendous spiritual meaning, because they do amount to the modern-day mystical experience. A mystical experience is a personal experience with the divine, a personal spiritual experience. It's very hard to have that in a church these days, for reasons we won't go into. It's very difficult. You can't read it. You can't get it out of just reading a book, even the Bible. That was the great thing about the ancient religions, the pre-Christian religions. They weren't religions at all. They were mystical schools. So when you went to a temple in ancient Egypt or Rome, nobody was interested in theology. What they were interested in was having a true mystical experience, and they achieved it in very different ways, where you would participate somehow with the spiritual realities of the universe. They put you in touch with them. And in the old Christian days, too, you go to Notre Dame or Chartres. These are places of great spiritual power. Mystical experiences take place there. Well, those days are past.
Now they would go to church to hear about other people's mystical experiences.
Oh, no, they don't even like to talk about mystical experiences.
But I mean, you know, like such as the prophets.
Yes, exactly.
But I mean, they listen to mystical experiences that took place 2,000 years ago, but they can't. But they've kind of lost touch with the fact that it's still happening today, and it's still happening to them, you know, if they would just open up their eyes.
Well, they don't. They have other agendas. But we don't need any of that, because every person has these little mystical experiences. And if you collect them, like collecting butterflies, and you put them in your own little journal, you will see that you are, in fact, taking stage direction. Where's the director? Who's sending these things? There was a wonderful book called On the Nature of Fate that was written by Arthur Schopenhauer, one of the great 19th century philosophers. And he talks about this, too. And he says, too, he doesn't call it synchronicity. Of course, this is before his time. That term originated the following century. But he mentions also that our lives take on a kind of direction that is beyond our own control. And when you finally realize that something out there, the creator, for another lack of words, is so interested in the slightest little things in your life, you actually then begin to establish a rapport, a spiritual rapport. Mm-hmm. People then wonder, well, what's it all about? It would appear, just looking at it rationally from meaningful coincidences, that we are in a co-creative state with God, that God and ourselves are moving forward, that our lives are creating something in we're creating the universe, creating the cosmos. And how do we do that? How do individuals, like small little individuals like ourselves, do that? It appears that we do that by being true to ourselves, doing our true work, what the Buddhists call dharma. I've noticed a strange thing about synchronicities, that if you are not doing what you really want to do, let's say, for example, you go to work at a factory, and you do it for noble reasons, to maintain your family, but it's not what you want to do. What you really want to do is maybe paint. That's what you feel you want to do, but for economic reasons, you have to go to the factory. If you attempt to break out of that mold, and I'm going to do a painting just for myself, say, I want to paint this, not make a career, but I want to try that, I guarantee you the synchronicities will begin to constellate. I've noticed this with myself numerous times, other people have. The ancient Greeks said that every person is born at a crossroads. And at this crossroads, it's really not a crossroads, it's two roads that diverge. One is called the left-hand path, and the other is called the right-hand path. And the right-hand path is what society expects of you, and things that you have to do. Make a living, be a good citizen, don't cause trouble, etc., etc. The left-hand path has nothing to do with that. The left-hand path is to follow what's in your heart to do. Joseph Campbell said is to follow your bliss. Following your bliss is not egotism. It's not selfishness. It's doing what you think is significant, whatever it is, whether it's painting or running a conference as you're doing, or even reading a book that's really interesting to you but not necessarily approved of by society, whether it is or it isn't. And if you follow the right-hand path, that's the way to money and security, for the most part. People will like you, be popular, just do everything that's expected of you, be politically correct all the time.
Be part of the herd.
Yeah, be part of the herd. You'll live a safe life, a successful life. You will have no synchronicities, or very, very few of them. And at the end of your life, you'll think, what was that all about? If you have suppressed what you really wanted to do, I've never given into myself what I really wanted to do, not for pleasure's sake, but for significance sake. And that person dies thinking, well, what was that life all about? I did what I was told, and that's it. Yeah. If you follow the left-hand path, there's no security there. You may not be popular. You might be very disliked. You may not have any money. You won't have any power, but you'll be doing what is significant, and you'll be doing something which is inwardly very fulfilling. Your riches will not be of the external kind, but of the internal kind. So at the end of your life, at the left-hand path, you'll think, I've suffered a lot. I didn't make much money. People didn't like me. But I did what was in my heart to do. So there's a, what they say, the end of the left-hand path, the left-hand path ends at the cross, crucifixion. Because Jesus could have decided, well, I'll just be an ordinary preacher, go along with everything I'm supposed to do, and don't offend anybody, and I'll be just fine. Instead, he completely broke out of the mold, and that's where it ends up. But, so it's rough on both sides. Now, most people, they can't do completely the left-hand path. There's a lot of sacrifice there. Further along you follow, the greater the sacrifice is. So people go on the right-hand path for a while, and they go on the left-hand path, they go back and forth, and that's why the synchronicities take place. But I've found that the synchronicities mostly refer to following the authentic life. The synchronicities nudge us towards the left-hand path. They don't command us, but they're always suggesting, look at these opportunities. And then when you diverge from the left-hand path, they fall off. But when you go on to the left-hand path, that's when they constellate. The mechanism of synchronicity is passion. If you are passionately engaged in anything, it doesn't make any difference how relatively important it is to anybody else, but if it's important to you, if you are passionately involved in putting this conference together, or you're passionately involved in writing a book or whatever, that is where the synchronicities begin to multiply, and they usually inflect on your work. So these are true observations. These are not theories. This is true observations that anybody can make. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, that means that we are co-creators with God. And God wants to co-create with us in the sense that we do what is in our hearts to do. And everybody has something in them that sets them apart, something they can get passionate about. And if everybody followed that, I don't think that you have to follow the left-hand path completely, because that can be very difficult. And we can probably do a compromise, the average person, and maybe most of us can make a compromise between the left-hand path and the right-hand path, because we have to eat, we have to take care of our families, those are important things, we have to be good citizens for sure, but we also have to be at least partially true to our own inward passion. And that's where the synchronicities become very serious. They lay out a path for us, and it can be very scary. So that's why we're always in charge, though. That's the thing. That's the great thing. Nobody's telling us what to do. We have no orders to follow. These are all suggestions. Interesting stuff.
I teach classes on self-empowerment.
Good.
Because it is so important. People will come to me all the time, and they'll say, "What do you think, Mary?" Or, "Maybe I should buy this book. Maybe I should buy that book. I need to know what this person thinks." And I look at them and I say, no, you need to ask yourself, what do you think? And listen to yourself. And watch the synchronicity around you.
Yes.
You know.
Well, you know, that's a real flaw in our people. And that is, people are looking for someone that will take over their lives for them. Mm-hmm. They're looking for gurus.
Well, they've been conditioned to seek outside themselves instead of inside themselves.
Boy, you really are on the right track. There are so many people in the so-called New Age that have set themselves up. I won't name names because they're pretty obvious anyway. Set themselves up as great authorities to be followed. And they have followings, and people give themselves their thoughts to these people. And it's wicked. It's just evil.
Oh. I look at those people too, and I know who you're talking about. But and it's tempting, because you know, you watch these people and you think, my God, these people, you know, they're so conditioned out there.
Yeah.
The masses are so conditioned to look outside for themselves, to look for a guru, look for a teacher of some sort to give them the answers, and they'll pay any type of money.
Oh,
I mean,
sure.
You know, they'll sell everything they have just
it's
to...
It's the oldest trick in the book. It goes back many years.
They'll sell everything they have just to spend a weekend with this great teacher and walk out of there not knowing anything.
Right.
You know, but... I mean, these people are making tons of money, and they got all this property and all this, everything that they need, or everything they ever want, and of course they can never be satisfied because they always want more, because they know that they can always count somebody out of more money.
Well, they have to do that because their own inward space is so empty, so they're compensating by money and property and everything else, because their own inward life is...
And the temptation is, you know, even within myself, it's there. Because I get so many people that come to me, and they'll say, well, Mary, but, you know, I can't do it. I mean, no matter how much, because, you know, you always have that one little angel sitting on one side and the devil sitting on the other side of your shoulder, and that one saying, oh, you can do it, you know, and you just tell them that, you know, your answers will only come from you. So, but and then you got the
pointers,
and then and then you got the angel sitting on you saying, "No, that's not what your life is about. Your life is, if you're going to be a teacher, be a teacher. You know, don't say you're a teacher and, you know, for the reason of conning somebody.
Right.
Be a teacher because that's what you are in your heart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there are people out there, and like you said. And with me, I'll probably never sell a ton of books because, you know, I'm teaching people, you know, to come up with the answers themselves. And I'll, you know, never make myself rich because I can't do what these people do.
Well, but. You're very rich. You're one of the wealthiest persons I've ever met.
Well, I have good friends and, you know, and...
Well, not only good friends, but I mean your own inner wealth. That's the kind of a wealth that... is completely immune to the ups and downs of economy.
Yeah.
Nobody can steal it from you.
Yeah.
And people say, you know, that aren't familiar with this, that you say, oh, that's just, you know, compensation for, you know, you really would like to have lots of dough. But you have to make a choice in your life, you know, at some point. Do you want to have this inner fulfillment and the exterior wealth and so on? Well, that'd be nice to have. Everybody's so concerned about security, and of course we're told from cradle to the grave how life is bound up with your bank account. But those are...
And your credit rating. You know, what is your score? Is it, are you a 500 or are you a 700? You know. But I don't know. But there are more teachers out there now. I mean, true seekers like yourself, teachers such as yourself, myself, there's people out there that we do teach because that is our life path.
Right.
And then there's other ones, you know, that teach because there's, you know, they're not really teaching, they're just using that as an excuse.
Right, they're the big personalities and so forth.
Yeah, but if we can teach the people to start thinking for themselves and... you know, looking within themselves for the answers, then they won't fall victim to these other people.
Absolutely.
And when they start understanding how synchronicity works, that's what's so important about your book on synchronicity. It's because synchronicity is the language of the universe.
This is
the universe speaking to you. It shows you signs of the, you know, giving you signs that you're on the right path. It shows you whether to take a right or to take a left or to go forward that day or to slow down that day. It tells you, you know, who to be looking for, what projects to be watching for.
Yes.
It tells you everything that you need to know in signs.
I'm so glad you grasped that. That is it exactly. In a nutshell, it's the kind of communication of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And the power to transform is remarkable because at the time that I was studying this, like I said, I was an atheist. I was like a militant atheist. And after having gone through these experiences and collected them and tried to understand them, it was about a 6 or 7 year process. I completely threw out atheism. There's no way that I could rationally accept that anymore. I also ditched my old Christianity, I have to say. That didn't work for me anymore, although that was more valuable than absolutely nihilism or atheism. But it opened up the door to a spiritual life that I didn't really ever my whole life understand ever existed. And now I feel completely I'm in harmony, I feel now, with life. The ancient Egyptians understood this very well. This is not a new concept at all, and my book really doesn't bring out anything new in the least. All I've done is I've tried to simplify things and put them in modern American context, I guess. But the principles involved are thousands of years old. And the ancient Egyptians understood this. They referred to it as Ma'at, M-A-A-T. And the word translated straight means balance. Mm-hmm. And from that concept of, that was really what their religion was. I don't like to use the word religion. It comes from the word regulate and yoke. And these old ancient systems were far from that. And Ma'at, or balance, was something that the Egyptians strove for their whole life long, to create balance in everything. That's why they use the cat as a living symbol, a religious symbol of great power and importance to them, because the cat is this well-balanced animal that's able to walk on a very narrow precipice because of such excellent balance. And that's what we are to do in our lives, is to walk through life in a balanced way. They considered, for example, the definition of evil as being merely imbalance, when something is out of balance. So that's, and there are moments of Ma'at when things are in perfect balance. For example, you'll go out to a forest, for example, and you'll be struck to how beautiful this particular moment is. Maybe the sun breaks through or illuminates the leaves in a way, or a beautiful bird will appear, and something in your heart puts you completely in accord with your environment. That is a moment of Ma'at, where you are in complete balance. This also happens in deep meditation, not even particularly deep meditation, but good meditation, where you feel absolutely centered. That's also this feeling of balance. When you go through this Ma'at experience, this balanced experience, that's when the synchronicities clarify themselves, when they become clear, when their meanings become more than just detached incidents. I found that a synchronicity, even one that is calls attention to itself, like that Rushdie instance with the license plate, they're like the individual notes of a song. The individual notes might be pretty, but the melody doesn't appear unless you're able to string the various notes together. And it's the same thing with meaningful coincidences. If you have just one and you pay attention to that and it's detached from the others, it doesn't make much sense. But the more you string them together in sequence, the more the patterns and the cycles appear. The melody of one's life begins to emerge. I can definitely guarantee that for anybody that assiduously follows synchronicities and documents them in their own book of fate, as it were, that the patterns and cycles of their life, the melody of their life, will appear. Hmm. That's what transformed me from an atheist into, I don't know what I am. I am not any religion whatsoever, but I feel I'm really on a spiritual quest. And I now fully realize that there is a conscious intelligence that runs the entire cosmos. It's amazing, but it's the same intelligence is also interested in every slight nuance of your life.
Going back to your what you're talking about as far as balance goes, you know, I was thinking about the birds tell us when that point comes of Ma'at. They'll sing. Just so a balance is, you know, like day and night, right?
Yes.
So as day gives, there's that one point when day gives into night. Okay, that's the Ma'at. That's when the the two mesh together as one and they hit that zero point.
Yes.
And it opens up a doorway, you know, to the other worlds.
It does.
And the birds recognize that with a song. You'll always hear them just as the night or day is giving into the night, all of a sudden the birds start to sing.
Yes, yeah.
And then just as dawn or night breaks into dawn, all of a sudden the birds start to sing again. Because there again you have the ma'at. You know, two
that
times.
Balance between the light and the darkness.
Uh-huh. And when the two come together right at that certain point, that's when the doorway opens. That's at zero point. And people experience that too.
If you experience ma'at and you are following your synchronicities, your own inner life will become incredibly rich. And you will eventually realize this is my true wealth in life. No matter if I was to make millions of dollars, I would be fine, a lot of external things. But your whole perspective begins to shift. It's difficult beyond that to convince anybody, but unless they've actually had these experiences, and that's the great thing about a mystical experience, I came to believe in the existence of God, not in anything that I read, certainly not in the Bible, but I came to believe it through these experiences that you go through. And they are not misinterpreted. They're really quite clear, and that you are the best person to understand their meanings. You don't have
exactly.
to run it off to read my book or go to your school. Sure, it's good, you know, you can provide leadership and guidance. I can tell a few things to do in the book, but beyond that, they're on their own.
Well, the thing is, it's nice. Books are nice because they confirm, they validate. Or they should. That's what they should be used
they
for.
They can validate, or they can just validate. Show which way to go.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to walk the path. I mean, it's like a
right.
map. The map
right.
isn't going to take you there.
The map is within you.
Right. You know what? I love what you're doing because it's very American in the very best sense. Because our country was built on the concept of self-reliance, which you don't have today. We're such a service-oriented society now. We always want people to do stuff for us. That's not the way that America was built.
But it's like the animals in the zoo that were born in the zoo. They don't know any different. And until, you know, so they don't know about the jungles that they came out of, you know, and the freedoms they experienced or anything.
No.
And for generations upon generations upon generations, we were born into a world and we had no idea that it was a false world, you know, something that was created, you know, for us as a prison.
You're exactly correct. Yeah. There's a wonderful book about people that were born and raised in the Soviet Union, and the book is called They Thought They Were Free.
Yeah.
And, of course, they thought they were free.
Yeah, as the United States thinks we're free, compared to how it used to be.
Mm-hmm. Of course, the way it used to be was free. It was hard, though, because to be free, you have to assume responsibilities.
Yeah.
You know, it's good to have a community, and you have to rely on your fellow man. That's correct. But at the same time, you have to assume responsibility and you have to work for it. And that's why I love what you're doing by self-empowering people. You're getting back to that old principle of self-reliance. I mean, people should read the works of Henry David Thoreau and Ralph Waldo Emerson because that's the thing that they stress, the love of nature and self-reliance.
My heroes.
And those people are almost totally forgotten, not because they're politically incorrect.
Yeah, transcendentalism.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah. But it's slowly the veil is it's lifting and
being
the
torn
people,
to shreds actually.
And the people are awakening out of a deep sleep and they're starting to look around, you know, and they're not quite sure what they're seeing, but they know that they sense that there's something else out there now.
Yep.
And
yep.
so now it's so
because
important.
The system is getting so empty and I think people are realizing.
But I mean, 5 years back, it was the same system,
yep.
but we never recognized it.
Yep.
But You know, but what's so important about you and your work and people like you is because you're of the truth. And there's so many charlatans out there right now that are trying to take advantage of these people that are awakening. And, you know, and we need people out there that are there for, you know, as true teachers, you know, that these people can go to. Because otherwise they'll be ate up just like little kids, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know how to explain it any better than I just did.
You explained it quite well, quite clearly. You know,
I don't mean to run anybody down, mean to, you know, and if you listeners are thinking that I got anybody specific in mind when I'm saying charlatans, I don't. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that beware, you know how I try to tell people, watch for the fruit that they bear. Mm-hmm. Don't pay attention to their words.
Right.
Watch the fruit, you know, that they bear. Because, you know, I mean, study them. You know, just because something sounds good doesn't
well,
make it good.
In the Bible, doesn't it? You know,
yeah.
It says, by their fruits you shall know them.
Yeah.
That's tremendous. That's a great line.
Yeah.
But, you know, we talked about Carl Jung. And Jung shocked his colleagues and himself was almost drummed out of his profession when he ventured to say that for more than 30 years of his research, he concluded that human beings are born with a spiritual instinct. And the reason why he said this was when he tried to cure people of their different neuroses, he said, you know, I tried all the Freudian formulas and all that, and they did not really work. The only time that I could cure people was when I began to restore to them some kind of a spiritual response. Didn't make any difference whether it was an established religion or an interest in the arts or some kind of ideology. He said, and I can paraphrase what he writes about that. He says, from the moment that I could restore to my clients some kind of spiritual view, that was the beginning of their therapy. And from this, I conclude that all human beings are born with a spiritual instinct. Now, since then, there's a book that's come out by a man by the name of Frank Elpert, and it's called The God Part of the Brain. And Frank Elpert is an atheist still, which is hard to understand after having read this book. It's a brilliant book, nonetheless. And he and medical practitioners have identified the God part of the brain. It's an actual part of the brain that responds to spiritual stimuli.
And what's his name?
His name is Frank Elpert. It's called The God Part of the Brain. It's a little book. It doesn't sell well, but you can get it on Amazon.com. It's only about maybe 100 pages long. Brilliant book. What
he just cuts to the chase.
Pardon me?
100 pages. He just cuts to the chase.
Yeah, that's all. It's about 100, 128 pages.
No fluff, just stuff.
Right. And I think it's all self-published and all that little thing. I've corresponded with him for a while, as a matter of fact. And he just really summarizes what has been known, really, in medical circles for about 15 or 20 years now, that through usually negative ions, certain parts of the brain called the, I don't know if it's the hippocampus or the hypocampus, I show my ignorance here, the hippocampus of the brain, it's like a little curlicue, a little spiral at the base of the brain, and that when the hippocampus is stimulated properly, usually through the bombardment of negative ions, people experience spiritual phenomena, seeing ghosts, being in the presence of angels or gods, spiritual euphoria, and this connection.
Now, where's this base of the brain at? The third eye, what they call
no,
the third
it's not
eye,
the third eye. No,
because
no,
that wouldn't
no,
be the base.
No, that's the hippocampus is located towards the base of the brain, the cerebral cortex, and that this little spiral that when it's affected induces spiritual experiences even in people that are atheists or agnostics. It's remarkable. So human beings are born with a spiritual instinct. And it's unfortunate because there, it's unfortunate because there are so many people that realize that people do have a spiritual instinct. Well, they realize it on one level or another, and they exploit it for their own. I mean, that's the religion is the biggest business ever. Go to the Vatican someday.
Yeah. Right.
And it's a control mechanism. So the difficulty here is.
But you said something about being bombarded with negative ions.
Negative ions, that stimulates it. Now, that's remarkable because sacred springs, for example,
uh-huh.
and other parts of the other so-called sacred sites in the world are noted, are common for their abundance of negative ions. For example, if you go by a waterfall, for example, they're filled with negative ions. Numerous places that are sacred sites, like the Kaaba in at the center of Islam, or Stonehenge, a place like this, they're noted for their high levels of negative ions.
Oh, that's how come we can go into a sacred site area and have these experiences, because it stimulates that God part of our brain.
The God part of the brain is the hippocampus, and when you're subjected to that sort of a thing, the negative ions are powerfully affect the hippocampus, but they're not the only external stimuli that does. For example, certain light, like the light that comes through stained glass windows, will stimulate it. This is all in Alpert's book.
Oh, well, I gotta get that book.
Yeah,
I gotta get yours too, though. So,
well, thanks.
And the name of the new book is
The Power of Coincidence.
Okay.
And you can get it at Amazon.com. And they have a beautiful cover. God, they did just a fabulous cover this time. The past covers were rather depressing. The first edition of the book that came out showed a giant, titanic clock with these human figures standing on it, looking very depressed, like time was running out. Well, this one is much better. This one shows somebody standing on the edge of a pool, a reflection, and so it's, you can turn the book upside down. It's a different picture.
Now,
really
are you going to be bringing that book to the Burlington Vortex Conference this year?
Yes, I shall.
Okay, good.
But
and you went back to the colored the stained glass stimulates that part of the brain.
That's right.
Visual,
various things will
through the
hippocampus is stimulated by external stimuli. The negative ions are obvious. They use now negative ion therapy for certain patients that. Have a resistance to regular anesthesia. This was first noted about 1990, so this isn't all that long ago, when negative ion therapy was first induced. For example, some people that have a very strong resistance to regular anesthesia, it was found that they can be sedated with high concentrations of negative ions. Well, when they were sedating these patients with the negative ions, these patients very often said, "Oh God, I see an angel there," you know, and they were not in a hallucinating state. That's the thing; they weren't like out of their minds. They weren't like raving mad. They were just very, very relaxed, and they were awake. They were still conscious, very relaxed, getting their stress away. And then all
of
a sudden,
it would do is it change their vibration.
Yes, yes, exactly. And what would happen was they get very relaxed. Oh, I'm very much at peace. I feel very centered, kind of like a meditative experience almost. And then all of a sudden, well, you know, I saw Jesus come through my. He's asking how I was doing and things like that. Or the other things that will do it are music, for example, certain types of music, not rock music, that doesn't work, but certain music, for example, they found Bach's music. Interestingly enough.
Yeah, I heard that too.
Mm-hmm. Bach's music will do that. So that's when you would go to a place, say, for example, like Notre Dame Cathedral mm-hmm. in Paris, which has high concentrations of negative ions.
Huh.
That's because when Notre Dame was built, it was built over a Celtic sanctuary. How about that?
I had heard that.
Yeah, it was built over. As a matter of fact, you can still go into the basement, or I don't know if they let you down there anymore, but you could go into the basement of Notre Dame, and you can see part of this stonework from this ancient Celtic temple that goes back who knows how many thousands of years, and it might even be pre-Celtic. Some people think that it goes back to the Stone Age, amazing. You know, I don't know. But anyway, so when you go to Notre Dame, you're being bombarded by these negative ions. Plus, you've got the incredible stained glass going on, Bach's music echoing all over there, the choir's live music. So naturally, people are having religious experiences. It doesn't make any difference whether it's Christianity or what. You could be preaching Wicca in there. Would people be still responding in the same way? It has nothing to do with the theology.
So could a person make some sort of a negative ion generator?
Of course, you can buy them.
Oh, you can?
Sure.
Oh, wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah, it should work.
Oh,
it works all the time.
I want one. Huh? I gotta get one of those.
Well, the thing is, you know, what I found out about spiritual experience, though, is that, especially when you go to a sacred site or something, if you plug this thing in and you expect, okay, now I'm gonna have all these spiritual experiences, probably won't happen.
Yeah, right. Right.
The whole concept of spiritual effectiveness is you must bring something of yourself to it.
Right.
You can't just. I knew people that would go to a sacred site, a very powerful sacred site.
Making that connection.
You go to a sacred site and they'd say, well, I didn't feel anything, you know, I just went there. I mean, it's like going to a theater performance, you know, and some very funny comedian and, you know, it'll make me laugh, you know. Like, you have to bring something of yourself openness. You have to meet it halfway and then it will come. But, you know, it's. Again, it's American.
Of course, the sacred site is already putting out the negative ions.
Most,
right?
If not all of them, are. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
you're
that's
right.
What makes them,
but
that's
you
what
have
makes
to go.
Sacred.
You have to go there with this giving sort of an attitude where you, psychologically, where you're going halfway there. You just
right.
can't go there and say, "Okay, I paid my money. Now let me, you know, I want something to happen." But the negative ion machine, I think, it would be really interesting to have a negative ion machine working in the place where you do your meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And that you might really work quite well. Well, a lot of meditations do take place in sacred sites like Lhasa and Tibet. You know, these are places of all high negative ions are all over the place, but there are certain areas of the earth where they're particularly concentrated.
Yeah. And then, of course, you have to have the genus loci.
That's all part of it, you know.
Yeah.
The
conscious energy of the sacred site has its own conscious energy.
It does, yeah.
You know, and
very
so
complex.
It's not just one thing that makes it happen. It's a combination of so many different things.
It is.
And it all coming together at the right time, the right place, and yeah.
You have to have, a spirit of generosity and an openness.
Respect,
well, when you go to a great church, for example, a great cathedral, it's not only the physical manifestation of the church, you know, it's great beauty and carvings and stained glass and music and all that stuff. It's also the generations of people that have infused the stones with their own prayers and concerns over so many years, and the incidents that the funerals and the weddings and the baptisms and everything that take that all is very powerful energy. That's
I call it psychic energy.
It is psychic energy,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. And of course, now science does not balk at this concept at all, because science has known for over 100 years, although it hasn't really filtered into the general consciousness, that there's no difference on the subatomic level between matter and energy, that matter is nothing more than a variation of energy.
Right.
If that's the truth, and it is, well, then, of course, all these great human experiences, which are definitely energy form, electrical energy form, bioelectrical energy forms, have infused the actual stones. There's no doubt about it. And something of us still picks up on that.
Yeah.
But I think the synchronicities are really vitally important, because they're simple little messages that float down from the gods, and that if we pay attention to them, they will change our lives.
Well, if it wasn't for synchronicity, there would be no Notre Dame. There was no synchronicity. There would be no negative ionized generator for these doctors to use in their surgery.
Yeah.
I mean, this is synchronicity. People will get these great ideas, and they think to themselves, I had this great idea. Well, no, this was kind of like a coming together of all these synchronicities. synchronistical type of events that came together, and then there was just that light bulb moment.
Uh-huh.
And aha, you go. But it's all brought on, like you said, it's the universe speaking to us. And if people would just learn how to read the signs, and feel the signs, not only read them with your eyes, but you can actually feel them around you. Listen, you know, these little voices, you know, that says, oh, well, why don't you try this? And then you think to yourself, oh, that was a good idea.
You know?
You say, boy, I had a great idea. Well, okay.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I think the only thing that we can really ask is that we become good vehicles for these energies that are coming elsewhere. Because God, again, I hate that word, but God wants us to co-create with him, her, it, and do what I don't know what we're making, but we're making something together, and it's okay. It's good.
Well, you know, tomato, tomato.
Yeah.
You know, it's same fruit. Or I think that's a fruit. Tomato's a fruit. I think it is. Isn't that a fruit? Yeah.
Mm.
Some people say it's a vegetable, but I think it's a fruit. I don't know. But anyhow, you know what I'm saying. Same type of food. You know, and you know, and I tell people, you know, that they can call me Mary, Nancy, Susan, whatever. It doesn't change who I am. You know, a name's just a that's what I try to do, is get away from as tags. I do not like tags, because tags limit a person
to
what they
can do.
We really
get hung up in our language. We really do.
So when it comes to you know, trying to put a name I guess the East had the best way of saying it, the unspoken, the unspoken word, you know. Because you really can't put you can't put a name to God, because you can't contain him. You know, you can't. How would you describe this energy?
Oh,
it's so complicated, but yet so simplistic in the same.
Well, Joseph Campbell said is that God is beyond all categories of thought.
Yeah,
and what that means is that it's how can you possibly explain something that runs all of the galaxies?
Yeah.
And get it, it's a strange thing. There is, nonetheless, throughout all the galaxies that are now being seen by the Hubble telescope, there is nonetheless a commonality. There are themes that link all these things together. There are common patterns again. There are cycles that are seen, light forms. So as great and grand as these universes are, and as immense beyond our imagining, there's nonetheless the connection to ourselves. Everything is interconnected. The great lesson of nature is that everything is interconnected, but at the same time, everything keeps its own distance.
Mm-hmm.
And that is part of the Ma'at idea. Some people think, oh, we're all the same, we're all one and all that. Well, that's not true, because we'd all be mished together, and that has not happened. We don't all get jammed together. There is an interrelationship, but there's also a balance, because there's a sense of identity and distance. And those distances are good, because they amount to perspective, objectivity, not everything being crammed together as one. So when people say the universe, there's a oneness in the universe, that's true, but it has to be qualified, that statement, because there are interrelationships, but that not everything is the same. There's tremendous variety, unbelievable variety throughout all creation. And somehow, this great compassionate intelligence, whatever name you want to label it with, is interested in the slightest thing that you do, the slightest nuance of your life. Some people, I remember one person, I think, wrote to me, come to think of it, after my book came out, saying that my book failed to mention all of the evil synchronicities that take place. Well, I haven't noticed any. I've been following this now since 1990 or so, and I've never seen one synchronicity that has given anybody a wrong information.
Yeah, I think you're right. I can't think of any either,
no,
really.
No, they're all our gentle little suggestions. They amount to kind of guidance, you know.
But I do know that if people go against the flow, you know, that there will be obstacles put in their way until they go back to, you know, until they're guided back onto the right path.
Well, I don't know about that. I think that we have the right to go any place we want to go.
Well, you can swim upstream or you can float down. I mean, you know, you do have that. You do have the right to swim up or swim against the current, but it is so much easier to float with the current.
What I've found is that if the synchronicities mostly deal with the authentic life that you should be leading.
Mm-hmm.
And that if you decide, oh, no, I'm not going to have anything to do with that because people will think I'm weird or there's no money in it, and I'm going to stick strictly with the right-hand path, that's usually when the synchronicities fall off.
Yeah.
They seem to decline in their number. Whereas when you go back to the left-hand path and you're really interested in something, that's when they start to light
but
up.
But if you're on the left-hand path and you're trying to create a different path on that left-hand path, then you're swimming upstream.
Yeah.
You know, then you have problems. But if you decide that you want to get off that path altogether and just cut yourself off from, well, I guess, the Holy Spirit and join the materialistic world, well, the materialistic world will definitely take good care of you. But it'll always leave you hungry. Always seeking.
Yeah, and it won't always take good care. There's no guarantee.
But I'm talking, well, you know what I mean, materialistically.
Yeah.
But it'll always leave you hungry, always wanting more, always trying to destroy everything in your path, you know, without even realizing it.
The thing about synchronicities is that they bring out what are really important and valuable in your life. You know, you figure life is like a scuba dive. You've got an air tank. You've only got so much air, and eventually that air runs out, and you dives over.
Yeah.
And that's what life is like. And when the synchronicities, they comment on the things that are really important to you, eventually it gets through to you that there are other things more important than what the goals that are set for you by others.
Yeah.
You have to be true to yourself. These are, like I said, these are very old principles, you know, like Plato says to thy own self be true, restated by Shakespeare.
And at one point in time, we didn't have a clue what they were talking about. But now we do. We're awakening.
I hope so.
And it's about time. Well, of course, everything comes in its own time, too.
Yeah, that's very true.
And that's what's happening.
The universe is incredibly well-timed.
Mm-hmm.
Everything, there's a real sense of time there. But the great thing about synchronicity is I think that there are many great things about it. It provides wonderful sense of meaning in your life. It shows you that you have a great sense of meaning. But it has this wonderful affirmation of God's existence, because it proves to you in a very logical, rational way that, yes, there is this compassionate intelligence out there. And not only that it exists, but it shows you how to relate to it without praying or giving donations to the church. I mean, if you want to do that, well, that's okay, but that's not really the way to do it. The way to do it is to get to work, to do the work that's important to you. That's when you begin this actual co-creator relationship.
Right, and it also gives us hope.
It does.
Just hope about ourselves and what we're all about, and that there is more to us than just this life. There's so, you know, and oh boy, I'll tell you, we could do several different shows on this.
It's pretty endless.
Yeah, I'm totally fascinated with it. I did want to bring one thing up before we got off for tonight. Remember that Black Pyramid we saw?
Oh boy.
At Rock Lake?
Never forget that.
Remember the inscriptions on it?
You know, Mary, the only thing I really remember was that S that was kind of on its side, that scroll type.
Yeah,
S.
Well, you know, Brad's a Virgo. And one nice thing about Virgos is they just can look at things and remember things in detail.
He remembered more of the inscription than I did.
Yeah. Anyhow, if go on Google and Google out Ben Ben Stone, B-E-N-B-E-N. And tell me, you know, I mean, not during the show, but go to Ben Ben Stone and look at the inscriptions written on the Ben Ben Stone. And see, and tell him, because we got at the museum, I got this big picture of the Ben Ben Stone. Anyhow, Brad walked in there the other day, and he looked up and he says, "Hey, Mary, come here." I says, "What?" He says, "You know those inscriptions at the bottom of Lake Mills and that Black Pyramid?" I says, "Yeah." He says, there they are right there.
Wow.
I looked them. They sure look like it to me, but, you know, but anyhow, I'll just take a good look at the Benedict
Stone. I will.
Yeah. But,
Hopefully we're going to go back and find it.
Because, you know, those went from the base all the way up, pretty much.
But I was freaking out so bad when I saw that.
Well, we'll find it, because I marked it, you know, in my mind. I know just about exactly
where it's at. We just have to wait
at.
For the water clarity to improve, yeah. Which hopefully will be the end of September, beginning of October.
Yeah, folks, Frank and us were, was that in June?
That was June 22nd.
June 22nd, we went to Lake Mills to investigate the underwater pyramids of Rock Lake. And somebody from the DNR stopped by and had told us that the DNR had documented over 1,100 structures under the water there. And, of course, there's a lot more to be found. You can bet on that, because we found a beauty, didn't we, Frank?
That was the greatest sighting that I'd had. I've been diving in Rock Lake since 1987. And that was the most remarkable single sighting that I'd ever encountered. And I'm just so glad that you and Brad and the skipper of our pontoon boat were able to see it at the same time. I should explain that we were carrying along at that time an underwater camera, an infrared camera that was able to see through all of the silt and the debris in the water, and that we were sailing along an underwater stream bed, and on the, I guess it would be the south bank of this stream bed, we saw a black pyramid rising out of the mud, and there was an inscription on this pyramid. It was a stone pyramid, and boy, it was not a ruin, was it? It was like in great shape.
No, oh, it was beautiful shape. Yeah, it definitely. It looked to me like it was one solid piece, but I can't see it. How it could possibly be
one solid piece.
No,
it really wasn't.
That was my
impression at first, too, but when the camera came back on it, you could see there were other stones going up into it.
But it wasn't the smaller stones like what we've been seeing it.
No, it's completely different stonework.
Yeah, totally different.
Yeah,
it was black.
It was very black, yeah. And to see something like that underwater, under 20 feet of water, it's just, in Wisconsin of all places, just remarkable. And it was kind of funny because our camera actually ran right into it.
And, of course, that was synchronicity at work. Just happened to be at the right place. I mean, for the camera to just happen to run into
literally
it.
Literally run into
as
it.
As big as that lake is.
And then it would bounce off and then come back. We saw it several times. It was kind of funny, actually. The camera slammed into this thing, bounced off, and then turned around, and we got to see it again. We saw it several times.
Mm-hmm.
That was
sure
remarkable. That was. I'm just so glad you were able to see it. If I had seen it by myself, you know, nobody would believe me.
Oh, I know. But
that was tremendous, yeah.
And we want to thank Mark Eneper for the use of his pontoon.
Oh, he was great. Oh. Yeah, he saw it too.
Yeah. And then his son was there.
That was Travis.
Travis, yeah.
Yeah, he's a great diver.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a professional diver, a lot better than us.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
But we did a good job. We
Well, nobody died.
Yeah, we all came back, so
yeah. You know,
with a few tickets, but
that's another story.
But you can bet, you know, I got to thinking about that, Frank. If we would have pulled something up, I know that guy from the DNR was sitting someplace with his binoculars. I know he was.
Oh,
if we would have pulled something up, he would have. I know he was there watching someplace.
Oh.
Because how many times did he come back to that pontoon? Four or five times?
Yeah.
He was really worried that we were going to find something there.
Oh.
You know,
didn't think I'd forgotten about him.
Yeah, that boy, he was set back. Because if we would have pulled something up, you know, and took it, boom, we'd been nailed.
Mm. Well, we wouldn't have done that anyway.
No,
but
he was watching for it. I know he was.
Oh, boy, you're more perceptive than I am. I completely forgot about that.
Yeah.
We just want to take photos.
Well, those DNR guys, they're kind of sneaky, you know.
If we can just find it again and take a real photograph of it, that'll be...
Well, it'd be kind of hard to pull that one up anyhow.
Oh, we wouldn't do it. Yeah, we
wouldn't. We couldn't.
No, I couldn't.
You'd take, a crane wouldn't lift that big. That was a big... That's a big pyramid.
The pyramid looked is very difficult to gauge. It was mostly sticking above the mud. I think we're only looking at the top, but it looked like it was about maybe three and a half feet sticking above the mud. I couldn't tell how long it was.
I figured probably about six.
Okay.
But we don't know how deep how thick that silt is down there.
We don't know how thick the silt is. The visibility was so terrible that day. We would have never seen it without the infrared camera.
Yeah.
But
especially that black, being that dark.
It's remarkable that Brad was able to remember the inscription. I remember seeing the inscription, but I don't remember what it looked like, except that I do remember there was that one single letter on it that looked like an S on its side.
Mm-hmm. Which, if I remember right, is the symbol for water, or the cosmics.
Well, I don't know
what water.
Of course, we don't know what this culture was that left these pyramids at the bottom of this Wisconsin lake. We don't know.
Well, we got a pretty darn good idea, though, don't we?
Well, I can't say that. That's the A word.
Yeah, I know. But we got a pretty good idea. We're still working on it, folks. We'll let you know one of these days.
Oh, well, if we get that photograph. We can't tell anybody, really, because it's just we just saw it. You know, we don't have any proof of it.
Yeah.
So we got to get some photos. Even when we get photographs, people will say we just faked the photographs. But that's okay, because we'll have them.
Yeah. Well, the debunkers get paid good money for debunking. So,
yeah, they do.
You know,
they do.
So that's okay. You know, everybody's got to earn a living, right? But we know what we saw.
We sure do.
You know, and boy, that was thrilling.
God, that was just the best. The only one that ever came close to that was... When a pilot and I flying out of Watertown, Wisconsin, and a photographer, professional photographer from the Chicago Tribune, we flew over the south end of Rock Lake. Visibility was perfect, and you could see quite easily. We were 3,000 feet high flying over the south end of Rock Lake, and we saw this enormous delta formation underwater. It's 900 feet on each side. That was remarkable. We do have photographs of that.
Wow.
So that's beyond question, but that was incredibly impressive.
Well, Frank Joseph is going to be... If you guys got any questions on what we've been talking about tonight, Frank Joseph is going to be at the Burlington Vortex Conference October 30th, 31st, and November 1st. So he's going to be talking on synchronicity and... he's going to be at the room for where everybody's going to be all the authors and speakers are going to be together for a meet and greet, and so his books will be there for sale. You'll be able to stop in and ask Frank's bunch of questions and get your book autographed. So anyhow, we invite you down to Burlington, Wisconsin for the second annual Burlington Vortex Conference.
It's going to be a fabulous conference, too, because you've got Jesse Marcel Jr. there. I don't know how you snag all these great people. And then, of course, Dr. Stanton Friedman. These two men are the most credible presenters on the UFO phenomenon. You just can't get anybody better but than these two men, I don't believe.
Well, I'll tell you, wait until you meet Dr. Brooks Agnew.
Oh, he's very excellent also.
Oh, cause he,
there are a few. He belongs to the same group. So you've got...
Because he's going to be talking about that North Pole expedition that they're going to be doing to go to the inner Earth, because they think that they've got it located where they'll actually will actually be able to go down into the opening.
That's remarkable. Mm. So and you'll have an excellent conference. And
yeah, so we're going to be...
Your conferences are always just very wonderful.
Well, it's going to be synchronicity. It's going to be inner Earth. It's UFOs, paranormal. I mean, everything. You know, and it's Halloween weekend. It's how fun.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The portal will be open.
The portal will be open. Yeah, and then we'll have the VIP dinner and the Halloween party and the Haunted Woods tour. You know,
it's fabulous.
And you know how we all are when we get together. We all have a good time.
Always.
Yeah. So, anyhow, everybody, get Frank's book. I know a lady contacted me today, and she told me that she bought your book today.
Power of Synchronicity? Power of Coincidence?
No, she bought the book on Rock Lake.
Oh, I see.
She bought a ticket, too, and she's going to be getting a ticket soon, because she wants to meet you, because she wants to talk to you about Rock Lake and the pyramids. So.
Oh, wow, well, we have a lot of new stuff to share with you.
Yeah, so she wanted to know how to get a hold of you or you get the book, and so I told her, and so she wrote back to me and said that she bought your book. So.
Oh, that's very sweet, very kind.
I think she's from Ohio.
Oh, that's quite a distance out to come, but...
Well, you're worth it. You're worth it.
Well, I don't know, but certainly Dr. Friedman will be worth it. He's just excellent.
He's coming in from Canada.
Jesse Marcel.
Well, he just contacted me today, and him and his wife are taking a vacation to Russia. They're leaving today or tomorrow.
Oh.
Yeah.
Won't that be interesting?
We'll find out. I'm sure that there's a little bit. He says that they're going on vacation, but I'm thinking, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Now I wonder why he's really going there.
Well, he may come back with a lot of great material on UFO phenomena in Russia.
Mm-hmm. Something, yeah. Who knows, huh?
Yeah.
We'll find out when he gets back.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyhow, Frank Joseph, we thank you very much for doing the show with us tonight. And you'll be able to listen to this on demand at BurlingtonNews.net. It'll also be run throughout... Now this show will be run all the way through the Burlington Vortex Conference, so on our 24/7 live stream. So because I want everybody to know who Frank Joseph is and what start understanding what synchronicity is all about.
Well, that should be fun.
And you can find out more about Frank at just by going to Burlington Vortex Conference. Whoops, I'm sorry. Go to burlingtonnews.net/Burlington Vortex Conference. Okay, again, burlingtonnews.net/Burlington Vortex Conference. And then just go click on to his picture there, and it'll take you right onto a site that I've written or that I've put together for Frank, and it gives you all the information that you'll need. And then links that I kind of cross link to over to his sites and a few other people's sites too. So anyhow, it'll keep you busy, guys. And again, thank you everybody for listening to our show tonight. This is BUFO Radio, Mary Sutherland and Frank Joseph, and see you at the Burlington Vortex Conference. Good night now. Night, Frank.
Good night, Mary. I'll see you then.
Well, okay. Bye-bye.